Soundwave ignored him, speeding past a barricaded side road that looked like a highway entrance ramp, and then almost immediately lunging into a large, open structure along the side of the road. It reminded Sylvia of a multi-story car park, and she wondered what possible use they could have for one of those on Cybertron, as they sped onto a spiraling ramp leading upward, the lateral G-forces mounting as Soundwave drove ever faster up the spiral, until at last they emerged onto the roof. This was covered with a small forest of antennae and other high-tech devices she could not immediately identify, dispelling its resemblance to a parking garage. Soundwave navigated among the structures at full speed, heading straight for the low barrier that ringed the roof. Just as they reached it, he jumped into the air with a burst of boost thrusters, clearing the barrier with ease, and flew in a gentle arc into the space beyond. Sylvie whooped with a mixture of surprise and delight as they swept through the air and slammed down on the highway whose sealed-off entrance ramp they'd passed on the way to the building. She'd heard of these before, the famous Cybertron speedways, transforming superhighways for a transforming planet, capable of being redirected from a central control network to make more efficient routes for priority traffic. The problem right now was that they were enclosed, roofed over by semi-cylindrical canopies of transpex, and Soundwave was on the outside. The slick, curved surface was ideal neither for steering nor traction. A couple of missiles solved that problem, and then they were falling through to land with a jolt and a scream of Cybertronian tires on the Durasteel road deck. Flashing purple hollow arrows in the center indicated the direction of travel this particular speedway was configured for at the moment. At least that was in their favor. As Sylvie watched, eyes wide with wonder, a section of the highway ahead of them reconfigured itself, new sections seeming to build themselves out of spare, flat, and curved transpex panels, no Durasteel in these segments, to join the main trunk they were on now to another that would take them closer to their destination. All of which was great, and very exciting, until the middle of the road arrows suddenly turned red and pointed back the other way, and the segment toward which they were barreling at top speed began to retract. I don't want to seem overly nervous, said Sylvie, but is the highway supposed to be doing that?
Sylvie, this is Lightspeed. Come in.
Sylvie keyed her hand link. Hey, Lightspeed, good timing. I got a little problem here.
That's what I'm calling about,
Lightspeed told her.
The network incursions are branching. I've got Signal Lancer on the other line. We think one of their subprocesses is hacking the speedways.
Who can play that game?
Soundwave said, and data started streaming across the display in the center of his dash. But if you're hacking, who's driving? Sylvie asked.
You are,
Soundwave replied. Gah! Said Sylvie, grabbing the wheel. In the next couple of minutes, she put all the combat driver training she'd received at the 3WA Academy, and before that from her motorhead parents, to good use, keeping Soundwave on the road despite the fact that, as he and the unknown enemy struggled for control of the speedway network, the road kept trying to get out from under him. Finally, and most alarmingly, one of the extending segments started to build its way up into the air while they were on it, constructing a sort of ramp to nowhere, before the final section self-destructed at the top.
Mind the gap,
Soundwave deadpanned as they hurtled off the end and into the space beyond, over the little icon perimeter wall, and into a wide, rubble-littered plaza at the edge of the district. They slewed sideways, then back the other way, Soundwave's wheels fighting for traction on the polished metal, and then fetched up hard against a fallen column that had once been holding up a decorative portico at the far end. An airbag burst from the center of the steering column and prevented Sylvie from getting a Decepticon shield embossed on her forehead. Blaster received no such consideration and bounced off the inside of the windshield, tumbling to the floor with a complete lack of dignity.
Ow! Sucka, that was deliberate, he accused.
Bitch, bitch, bitch,
Soundwave replied, retracting the airbag.
I'm the one that crashed into a wall.
Stifling a giggle, Sylvie retrieved Blaster from the floor and climbed out, after which both comm officers transformed to robot mode. Sylvie took a few steps into the plaza, made a quick survey of the damage, and then looked up at the two transformers.
I hate to be cliché, but it's quiet. Too quiet.
Blaster looked around as well. Yeah, I second that emotion, Sylph. This place is supposed to be one of the major access hubs. See the guard posts and access roads in the central plaza? But they've been hit hard. Soundwave nodded and pointed out several places where building rubble had been purposefully collapsed into the streets, making rough but serviceable roadblocks.
Affirmative. Tactical strike to interdict access. Defenders forced to flee into the city. Assistance impeded.
Blaster sighed. Great. Well, we better be hoofing it double time. At least our signals back out to Autobase should be good.
Affirmative. Data links back to Autobot Communications Center stable.
Well, that's something at least, Sylvie replied, and then muttered to herself, looking down at her jumpsuit. In the rush to get to Little Iacon, she hadn't had time to put on any armor. Really wish I'd brought along a cyclone. Soundwave tilted his head, apparently involved in some internal communication, and then reached up to press his shoulder eject button.
Buzzsaw, ravage, eject. Operation, reconnaissance. Laserbeak, eject. Operation, patrol. Rumble, frenzy, eject. Operation, defense.
As he announced each of his minicons' names, they flew out of his open chest door and transformed, landing on the ground in front of him or taking to the air. Immediately, Buzzsaw let out a brief screech of acknowledgement before flying down one of the damaged streets. Ravage gave a slight snarl of his own before dashing off into the shadows of another street. Laserbeak began to fly around the group in a large, slow orbit, keeping his sensors tuned for any anomalies. Rumble and Frenzy cracked their servo joints, ready to cause mayhem at a moment's notice, as they moved to flank Soundwave and Sylvie. Not to be outdone, Blaster rolled his optics and repeated the process with his own cassettes. Steeljaw, start sniffing for hostiles. Rewind, cover our backs. Ramhorn, keep an eye on Sylvie, okay? Sylvie watched the proceedings as Blaster's own cassette crew got ready for battle, and then glanced up at their commander. Feeling some cassette envy, hmm? Never mind you. Allowing herself a slight smile, Sylvie squared her shoulders, consulted her updated gazetteer's hollow maps, and led the way further into the district. About 10 minutes in, having managed to work their way along two district blocks without encountering a single Cybertronian, active or not, Sylvie spoke up again.
So, any luck with that analysis, Blaster?
Eh? The Autobot paused from where he'd been looking into a damaged shop front, and then regained the conversational track. Yeah, there's some seriously freaky stuff going on in those comm logs. He shook his head and looked off down a side street. You'd think a botnet like that would be tossing status and sensor messages around like crazy, but it wasn't. The bots, or whatever those runtimes were, weren't doing that at all. They weren't just polling each other, but processing their inputs and forwarding recommendations to the rest of the group. Rewind, who had been listening in, spoke up. A consensus hierarchy? Everybody contributes, majority wins out? Blaster nodded. That's what it looked like.
Secondary analysis concurs.
Soundwave added, turning back to look at the group.
Significant traffic in a radial network among clusters of runtimes to make decisions.
Sylvie frowned, thinking this over as they began to move again. I really do not like the sound of that. How many runtimes were active in there?
Current estimates indicate in excess of 1 million, according to last ComSen reports. Numbers have stabilized since countermeasures began.
Sylvie whistled. Shit. I'm amazed the entire civil infrastructure for Little Iacon didn't collapse under that processor load. Yeah, well, that's the other strange thing, Blaster commented. Those runtimes look to be low-impact, high-efficiency types. Not quite full-fledged intelligences, but good enough for government work. Definitely not a full-on AI like Vision or Eve. Hell, even one of our maintenance drones would be smarter. But when you get them all together like that... Yeah, that's what worries me. It makes for one big-ass neural net.
The more of them there are,
Soundwave observed,
the smarter the collective becomes.
Sylvie rubbed her forehead. That sounds really familiar. I could swear I've heard about a system like that somewhere before, or read about it. Blaster frowned and held his electron scrambler rifle a little tighter. This whole sitch stinks like an Alicon pit. Soundwave looked up as if listening to something the others couldn't hear, then said,
USA reports visual contact. District subsidiary square, lower level.
His chest holojector came online, projecting the feed from Buzzsaw's visual sensors. It took a moment for Sylvie to get her bearings. Buzzsaw had found a perch in an upper level on one of the buildings surrounding a small, sunken corner plaza, and was looking down into said plaza with his optics zoomed. A minicon, mostly red with white trim, was running full tilt toward a lower-level bulkhead door that looked like it led to an underground maintenance shaft. But he was gunned down from behind by what looked like plasma fire before he could reach it. As he fell, Buzzsaw panned back along the line of fire and zoomed in still further, resolving a grainy image of the Minicon's attacker. It looked like another robot, but built with an entirely different design concept than any Cybertronian Sylvie had ever seen, almost more like a Genom Boomer, synthetic musculature clad in mostly smooth biosteel armor, with few of the discrete parts and visible seams that marked the average Transformer. It was vaguely humanoid, but disproportionately slender, with oddly shaped lower legs and two-fingered hands, and its head was an arched cowl with a single glowing photoreceptor in the center. It scanned the square back and forth with this, looking for more targets. At the sight of it, Sylvie felt that memory fragment she'd been worrying at click into place. Oh... my God, she breathed. Sylv? Blaster asked. It's the Sprocking Geth, Sylvie snarled, her face flushing with anger. The what? Sylvie punched herself lightly in the side of the head, uttering a string of profanities in several languages. I should have seen it earlier. The base code for the neural network, the collaborative polling, the huge number of individual instances, they're all features that the Quarians used for designing the Geth. Blaster hunkered down so that he was more or less eye to eye with her and said, Sylvie, pretend for a second that I don't know anything about what you're talking about, and just tell me what the slag is going on. Geth, Rewind answered before she could. Cybernetic life forms, accidentally created by the Quarian civilization circa standard year 1895. Swarm intelligence architecture existing in a perpetually networked neural simulation state. Responsible for the fall of the Rannoch hegemony, 1896 SC. Implicated in Seleucian incursion, 2287 SC. Reports unconfirmed. No subsequent sightings outside Perseus sector. He tilted his head in puzzlement. Their motive for invading Cybertron is... unclear. I don't think it really matters why they're here right now, do you? Blaster asked.
Negative.
Soundwave agreed.
This incursion unacceptable, regardless.
Sylvie took a deep breath to center herself, and then straightened up, a grim expression crossing her face. Soundwave's right. If the Geth are here, in force, we need to stop them before they get entrenched further. But to do that, we'll have to get further in, see just how many there are and what they're doing here. Never mind the why. And do it without being caught, Blaster added. Peachy.
Affirmative.
Sylvie brought up her gazetteer map. Where was Buzzsaw again? Soundwave tilted his head for a moment, then reported back.
Little Iacon Rejuvenation Project, Sector 5, Tayari Plaza.
She nodded and highlighted the area in question, about a third of the way toward the core of the city, as well as their own location near the edges.
Okay, if we're here, and there's been no Geth so far, they've probably pulled further into the city. Think Steeljaw and Ravage can sniff us out a path that'll avoid any patrols if we move along this vector? Both comm officers nodded, and then Blaster added, "Just filled in red alert about what's going on, and I'm telling you, he is not pleased. Please tell me you got more info on these guys, Selv." "Was just about to offer it," she replied, popping a data solid out of her Fairlight Cortana and handing it to him. "That's the best I can do for now. It's all historical, but it's a start."
"Well, what are we standing around here for?" Rumble abruptly added. "Let's get going."
They slipped deeper into the eerily silent city, guided by transmissions from Ravage, Steeljaw, and Buzzsaw. Sylvie had never particularly cared before that there was never really a day on Cybertron, since the planet had no sun, but now she felt the encroaching dark keenly. Little Iacon's streetlights, and most of the building lights, come to that, were on, and the district was no darker than anywhere else in the resettled part of Cybertron, but the black sky above and the shadows in the alleys and side passages seemed to press closer as the group moved carefully through the empty streets, every nerve alert for trouble. They'd penetrated about a third of the way into the sector, if Sylvie's map were any guide, when Ravage warned them to halt and find cover. At the end of the street, there was a cluster of what looked like Durakrete traffic barriers, a couple of them overturned, that seemed to have been hastily erected and then left behind when whatever was happening to the district had swept through the area at some earlier time. The smaller members of the party hid behind these while Blaster and Soundwave went to either side of the street, standing close to the walls of the buildings, then eased around to get a look at the trouble spot Ravage was warning them about. It was a subway station, or rather the street-level entrance to one, a low building built into the opposite side of the small square formed by the intersection of two main streets, its glass frontage opening onto a set of escalators descending to the tunnel level. A couple of Geth combat forms, destroyers, according to Sylvie's database, although she freely acknowledged that her information might be out of date, were standing as if on guard near the entrances. Hunched against the Durakrete barrier, cradling one of his thruster guns in both hands, Rumble peered over the top and muttered, "They don't look so tough." Then he ducked down again and looked over at Sylvie. "Hey, ain't you got a weapon?" Sylvie sighed.
"No, it appears not. No weapon, no armor. I was expecting a quiet day in the comm center, not a field trip to a firefight. That'll teach me not to pack for contingencies."
Rumble smirked slightly, reached to his back, and removed the second of his two thruster guns. "Here," he said, handing it over. "Works about like you'd expect." Sylvie glanced at it, taking a mere couple of seconds to familiarize herself with the controls, then smiled at him.
"Thanks, Rumble."
"No trouble," he replied, shrugging and looking back at the Geth. "Can't let you go into a fight without a gun."
Sylvie thought she heard Frenzy stifle a derisive snort behind her, but ignored him.
"Minimal comm traffic,"
Soundwave said. Blaster nodded. "These two are probably the only Geth in the area, left behind to cover the station."
"Why did they put guards on a train station?" Frenzy wondered. "I mean, pretty obvious they've been here already."
"Must be something in there they think is important," Rumble mused.
"We should check it out," Sylvie agreed.
"Well, there's only two of them," Frenzy said.
With muted transformation sounds, his fists converted into drills. Very Getter too, Sylvie realized with a touch of unexpected pleasure, and started to get up, but Sylvie grabbed his elbow.
"Without attracting the rest of them," she said. "They're networked, remember?"
"Jamming their network links now,"
Soundwave declared.
"Laserbeak, Frenzy, neutralize."
Frenzy smirked, shrugged, and vaulted the barricade as Laserbeak swooped out of the sky. The two Geth looked around, confused, as they suddenly lost wireless connectivity to the rest of the network, but before they could take any action, one had been cut down by Laserbeak's precision lasers, and the other had been terminated with extreme prejudice,
and, Sylvie had to admit, a surprising measure of skill, by Frenzy's drill fists. Warily, the group moved in. The entrance to the station was scaled for minicons, so Frenzy, Rumble, Rewind, and Ramhorn descended to the platform level with Sylvie, while the two full-size Transformers stood guard up top. "Hello," Sylvie murmured quietly as she saw what was down there. Rumble scratched the back of his head. "Cargo containers?" Frenzy looked into the top of one of the containers, standardized modules used throughout Cybertron's transit system, each one about 10 feet by 5 by 5. "Empty cargo containers."
"Well, I guess we know how the Geth got here," Ramhorn observed.
"There's got to be a couple hundred of these boxes in here," Rumble said. "How small do you think those things pack down to?"
"Small enough," Sylvie replied, "that we've got a big problem."
"How did they get onto Cybertron in the first place?" Rewind wondered.
"Somebody is asleep at the scanners down at the Hydrex Plateau Port Authority, apparently," said Sylvie. "That probably explains the bursts of weird network traffic they had down there yesterday." They climbed back to the street and reported their findings, which Blaster relayed to Autobase with some urgency. Then he said,
"We gotta keep moving. Jamming or not, somebody's gonna come looking for these two sooner or..."
A Geth patrol group, perhaps a dozen strong, rounded the corner at the other side of the square and, spotting the group by the station, immediately opened fire.
"Scrap," Blaster finished, diving for cover.
The Geth knew how to use cover, too, when they weren't caught by surprise, and before long it looked like turning into one of those interminable gunfights like Sylvie had seen in old cowboy movies, which was a situation that favored the Geth even if they were suffering greater attrition.
"If they keep us pinned here much longer, we're going to be up to our asses in reinforcements," Sylvie pointed out.
"I know," Blaster replied. "I'm working on it."
"Ravage and Buzzsaw are in position for flanking maneuver,"
Soundwave reported.
"Steeljaw'll be with them shortly," said Blaster. "I just hope between them they have enough firepower to..." "Aw, hell no," he trailed off as an enormous quadrupedal Geth unit moved up behind the others. The thing was easily the size of a quite large Autobot, much bigger than the bipedal units it was supporting, and when it reached a position in the van of the Geth formation, it unleashed a bolt of energy from a built-in weapon that blasted Frenzy's cover to smithereens, sending the Minicon tumbling ass over tea kettle back into the station lobby. Sylvie consulted her database and didn't like what it told her at all.
"Aw, crap, that's a Colossus."
"They got one of those in a standard cargo module?" Rumble said, impressed. "I guess they do pack up small." "I'm fine, everybody. Thanks for asking," Frenzy said as he scrambled into position next to his brother. "Who's got a plan?"
"Concentrate fire on left foreleg,"
Soundwave ordered.
"Rumble, activate pile drivers. Operation destabilization."
Rumble peaked above cover, then ducked again with a curse as the Colossus sent a spray of fire from smaller, rapid-fire blasters over his head.
"I'm gonna have to get a lot closer," he said.
"We'll cover you," Sylvie told him.
"You better. Hey, do you hear that?"
Sylvie didn't, for a moment, until it filtered down through the noise of the firefight, the throaty bellow of a heavy piston engine, somewhere off to the east and getting steadily louder, and with a blare of pneumatic horn and a cry of,
"Gangway!"
an enormous green vehicle, sort of a cross between a meerkat patrol vehicle and a monster truck, roared into the square, slewed into a four-wheel drift, and neatly cut the Colossus's front legs out from under it. Just before the green vehicle came to a stop, a human-sized figure clad in two-tone pale gold armor sprang from the roof, where it had been crouching, and slashed across the Geth machine's frontal armor, bright blue energon blades glinting from both arms. The Colossus, already falling, reeled back as its single optic exploded, then crashed to the ground on its side. It started getting up as the little figure darted into the group of bipedal Geth off to the right,
tearing into them with moves Sylvie recognized, even at this distance, as one of the more acrobatic of the various cyborg martial arts collectively known as the Panzerkunst. The green truck responded by backing up, complete with safety beeper, which got a laugh from Rumble, and crushing it. Then, with engine roaring, commenced a series of donuts that threw up a great cloud of smoke and scattered the smaller Geth in all directions. A moment later, another vehicle, this one small, by comparison, and bright yellow, arrived from the same direction, then sprang up into robot mode and opened fire with a pair of forearm cannons. Within moments, the square was full of smoke and parts of defunct Geth, and then the ComSen group's unexpected backup crossed to join up with them. "Boy, are we glad to see you guys," the yellow Autobot declared, converting his arm cannons back into hands. Then he blinked at the sight of Soundwave in his cassettes and added, "Well, maybe not you guys." Frenzy snorted. "Typical." "Hey, I'm glad to see anybody who isn't one of those things," the human-sized figure remarked. Sylvie couldn't tell whether she was a very small minicon or a human in some sort of powered armor, but she definitely had a young human female's general shape, and Sylvie had never heard of a minicon wearing a dress over, or as part of, her armor. "What the heck is going on around here?" "Stinger," said Blaster, shocked. "Sorry, Bulkhead, what are you guys doing here?" "No time, we have to move," Sylvie interrupted. "We can talk when we're not standing around at the epicenter of a huge disturbance in the Geth network." "Good call," Rumble agreed. "Getting out of here first. Explanations later." "Where do we go, though?" Frenzy asked. "This whole district's crawling with Geth." Soundwave looked around, then pointed at the subway station's larger service entrance.
"I have an idea."
They went all the way down to the platform, which was deserted and away from the prying eyes of surface patrols, but easily defensible if investigating units topside should decide to come down after them. Ravage and Steeljaw prowled the upper levels, vigilant for pursuit, while Laserbeak monitored the train tunnels themselves in case the Geth were patrolling them. "Okay," said Blaster. "Looks like the coast is clear for now. Sylv, surprised you haven't met this crew before. They've been cutting quite a swath through New Avalon the last couple years." "Yeah, but I've been on Missouri for 3, Sylvie said. "Hi, Sylvie Daniels." The small figure in gold turned to her, and then, with a faint, modulated transformation sound, her faceplate divided and folded away into the sides of the curiously shaped helmet she wore. This revealed a brown-skinned, pretty human face with wide eyes that, disconcertingly, glowed with the blue light of an Autobot's optics. "Hi," she said, her voice no longer metallic. "I'm sorry. Sorry, Sumdak. This is Stinger," she said, indicating the yellow Autobot. "And this is Bulkhead," she added, patting the green truck on the hood. Grinning, she added, "You probably could have guessed that, huh?" Then, the newly arrived group delivered another surprise by revealing that there were actually 4 of them. Bulkhead had a passenger, a human girl dressed in a suit of black CVR-3F, who climbed out in a state of great excitement so that he could transform to robot mode. "That was awesome!" she declared in a high, clear voice with a trace of a Neo-Japanese accent, shoving back her helmet's faceplate to uncover a face that went with the voice. "You guys are totally metal!" Most other Autobots, apart from Jazz, might have had a problem parsing that remark, but Blaster just said, thanks, and you are?" "Oh, sorry, duh," said Sorry. "Guys, this is Miko. She's Bulky's girlfriend." Bulkhead fidgeted uncomfortably. Miko rolled her eyes and said warningly, "Sorry." Okay, she's my roommate at NAIS, but I'm telling you, I know the signs," Sorry insisted. "Whatever works," Sylvie told Miko with a shrug. She turned to Sari. "Pretty nice moves out there. Cyborg?" "Transformer," Sari replied. "Sort of. I'm kind of me or robot me. My dad had an accident with his DNA in a blank protoform one time." Miko snorted. "Not like that, and you know it. Do we have to do this every time?" "Yes,"
Miko replied. Sari sighed deeply. Anyway, regular me or robot me? Regular me has the face you can trust, she said with a cheesy grin. Robot me, she went on, recalling her battle mask and deploying but not using each system as she named it, has palm repulsors, licensed from Stark Industries, sort of after the fact, that was embarrassing, these awesome forearm blades, and of course my patented Energon hammer. Oh, and jet skates, those are handy. What else? Micron boosters, can't forget those. And these little wing things, which I don't think do anything but look cool, but maybe later. She shrugged. And as you saw earlier, she added, retracting her mask and giving a semi-serious smirk, mad combat skills. And occasionally stabbing Bumblebee, Miko put in, making Stinger stifle a snort. Sari rounded on her friend, throwing up her hands. It was the one time! Why does everybody have to bring that up? What are you guys doing here, anyway? Blaster asked. We picked the wrong day to come down here for tapas, Bulkhead replied, causing Blaster to just blink at him. Are you kidding? This rocks! Miko protested. Way cooler than cruising for robot food I can't even eat yet. Totally have to get one of those Energon processor implants. No, I mean, I thought you guys were staying at NAIS for the summer term, Blaster said. Yeah, well, we were, but... Stinger hesitated, as if not quite sure how to put the next part. The call just got too loud, Sari answered for him. The guys could still put it off, but I got to the point where I couldn't sleep at night. I'd just pace. It was driving Miko up the wall. It wasn't the pacing, Miko told her. It was the constantly transforming your hands. She bent her fingers into the repulsor beam's shape, imitating the sound Sari's transformations made, then relaxed them, repeating the noise. If you gotta fidget, fidget quietly. No, we had it pretty bad by then, too, Bulkhead assured her. We were ready. The time was right. Do your mom and dad know you're back? Blaster asked Stinger. No, he admitted. We came down here to do the tapas thing and try to figure out how to break it to them. Blaster chuckled. Figures. Well, I wouldn't sweat it. I expect Prime will have a word with whoever it is at NAIS takes care of these things. The way things are going right now, we're going to need everybody back home. Okay, so what's with the Decepticons? Miko asked bluntly, gesturing to Soundwave and his troops. What are they doing here?
Helping,
Soundwave replied. Miko eyed him. Seriously? I thought you guys didn't really go in for that kind of thing.
Seriously?
Huh. It's a long story, Sylvie said. Right now, we ought to keep moving. You guys might as well stick with us until we get this figured out, Blaster said. You'll be as safe with us as you would be anywhere else in Little Iacon right now.
Buzzsaw has visual contact with the main Geth force,
Soundwave reported. He activated his chest holojector and showed them the view from Buzzsaw's optics again. Once more, the Decepticon spy had chosen a perch high above a plaza or square, but this one was much larger than the first, and it was filled with activity. My God, Sylvie murmured as her brain absorbed the pattern.
Little Iacon Central Square,
Soundwave said, raising up blinking tags to indicate each landmark as he named it. He went on.
Central Station, District Security Headquarters, Medical Center.
The second of the landmarks, facing onto the square's south side, was devastated. The other two were guarded by colossi. And in the rest of the sprawling city center space, Geth. Hundreds of them, surrounding a parked formation of the aircraft they'd seen in the distance on the security images Red Alert had shown them earlier. Now that they had a sense of scale to go by, they could see that these were transports of some kind. Each had a central boarding ramp. In the center of the square, Geth troopers were herding the district's population into a holding area. There, a much taller, white-armored Geth unit appeared to be sorting them.
Some were forced to one group of dropships, some to another, and a few, as they watched in horror, were simply gunned down on the spot and dumped to the side. Dropships filled and lifted off, replaced by empty ones in a neat, orderly pattern. This operation had clearly been planned carefully. The whole thing was running, well, like a machine, which Sylvie supposed, given who was executing it, it was. Where are they taking them? And what do they want them for? Stinger wondered. Does it matter? Sari replied. We have to get up there and stop them. Hold on, Blaster said. I said you could stick with us while we figured out what was going on, but we can't take you head-on into an assault. You guys are minors. Well, I'm not, Bulkhead mumbled, but no one paid any attention. We're Autobots, Sari shot back. Those people need help, and we're in a position to give it to them. And the longer we argue about it, the more the Geth are going to take. Or kill, she added, her voice becoming slightly shrill, as another unfortunate minicon failed to make the cut for whatever the Geth were doing and got blasted. Blaster looked at her for a moment, then turned to Miko. And you? I go where they go, she replied flatly. You do know this is a combat zone we're entering, right? Blaster asked. We know. We've tried, Bulkhead replied, glancing down at Miko, who just grinned and flashed him a V-sign in reply. Hey, at least you thought to bring a weapon, Sylvie told her, gesturing to the holstered handgun on the Japanese girl's hip. I had to bum one off Rumble. Blaster smiled faintly. Humans, he said with a wry glance at Sylvie. Can't live with them, can't sell them for parts. Okay, Soundwave, what's the plan, man? I assume you had one when you brought us down here.
Apart from a few pockets of resistance in the northwest, the Geth have complete control of the surface and can route reinforcements freely to any trouble spot,
Soundwave replied.
Their adaptive intelligence will probably find a way to defeat our jamming protocols, given sufficient time.
He pointed down one of the subway tunnels.
This is the most direct route to Central Square. We can overwhelm whatever defenses they have in place in the tunnel and strike at the center of their operation.
Miko whistled. Frontal assault. Ballsy. I'm in. Blaster shook his head, and for a second they thought he was going to argue, but a moment later it was clear he was reacting to another internal communication. The Air Guardians are all tied up in Aerovex, running cap for the Khan War Games. Red's going to try to get the little Iacon AA towers back online to keep any more Geth dropships from coming in, but we're not going to have much in the way of air support. He gave Soundwave a suspicious look, which is real convenient for the Geth.
Coincidence or opportunism?
Soundwave replied.
Megatron wishes to protect Cybertron. He would not permit it to be pillaged by the Geth, whatever their motives.
How do I know that?
Use your CPU, Blaster,
Soundwave said.
Even if Megatron were intent on conquest, the minicons of this district would be of no use to him, abducted or dead. An empty Cybertron would be a hollow kingdom. Cybertron is its people.
Blaster eyed him, saying nothing. We're wasting time, said Sari urgently. Blaster and Soundwave stared each other down for a moment longer. Then Blaster nodded. Okay, we'll play it your way. But if I find out you did have anything to do with this, you and me are going to finish what we started at Autobot City.
Agreed,
Soundwave replied. Then, dismissing the matter entirely, he issued a general recall to his cassettes, except Buzzsaw, who remained on station. Blaster did the same, then transformed to boombox mode while the others went to vehicle mode. Sylvie picked him up and carried him aboard Soundwave, Sari climbed into Stinger, and Miko boarded Bulkhead, and the little task force set off to do what they could for little Iacon. WDF Air Station Cybertron.
Patricia Currier was sitting at the desk in the temporary office she'd been given, catching up on reports from some of the operations against the Federation remnant she hadn't been part of herself, when the corner of her screen suddenly divided itself off and showed her the face of an Autobot colleague. "Jetfire to Terror. Are you there, General?" Terror keyed the channel open. "Right here, Jetfire. What's up?" "I hate to bother you when you're just getting settled in, but Blaster just calmed me. He has some kind of situation developing in Little Iacon that involves the Air Defense Network. I can't spare any bots to check it out for at least an hour. Can you help me out?" "Sure thing," she replied. "I'm not doing anything that can't wait a little longer. Can you give me a little more info?" "I haven't got a lot," Jetfire admitted. "It looks like there's been some kind of network incursion, maybe tied with a physical landing, but we don't know who's involved. Details are very sketchy. It doesn't look like the cons are doing it, oddly enough, but Prime wants me and my team to stay on the Iravex perimeter in case it's some kind of feint. What we do know is that the sector's aerospace defenses are down. Red Alert's working on that. Blaster's on the ground, but we have no way of getting a wide view without air assets." Terror nodded, getting to her feet. "Got it. Give me 5 minutes. I'll calm you when my bird's powered up and you can shoot me some coordinates." "Roger that,"